look at the what I like to call the script material, which provides then the framework for the 144 storyline. At this stage of the game in the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, there are basically four elements of the paradigm that I like to refer to as the four crown jewels.
Just want to let everybody know there is a handout. It's called the script that you can use to follow along.
Which I like to call the four crown jewels of this paradigm. One of them... Yeah, it's in your hand. It's in your folder, the script. One of them is the synodic cycle material, when we have a whole workshop on that, which is mainly about Mercury, Venus, and Mars cycles. A second one is the sacred marriage material, and we have a whole workshop on that. Actually, I'll be doing something, a condensed version of that, in something that Joan and Tomas and Lynn and I are doing in October here on Maui. And then a third element is called the timeline, the shamanic timeline, which is a way of looking at the initiatory processes as they operate through the life. So it's a way of, just by knowing how old you are, knowing where you are on the timeline, what are the main initiatory processes you're in, similar to what we were talking about at lunch today, Teresa, the 51 to 52 time period. Not every year has one, but many do, and there's a way of tuning into that. But the fourth of the, I think, the most important elements of this paradigm are the way we develop the 144 storylines. And I'm going to develop that material this afternoon and this evening. I think we're at the point where we can bring this in, even before getting to the part two of the practical stuff. And I want to say that we always teach this in the first class, you know, the introductory class. So we are, basically every class we do, we have a section that's just specifically on this at the beginning, because it's so foundational. It's such a cornerstone of this entire work. Even if you know nothing technically, you don't even know anything about, you know, aspects, or, you know, you don't know really how to read a chart, you could just ask one of us, well, what house is that in? And then from that you can get the storyline material. And I'm going to develop that in a way this afternoon, this evening. Hopefully you'll all be able to get this part. So the way it works is we first will look at a chart. This would be any time you first look at a chart, your own, someone else's. We're going to be looking at the chart as a symphony of three movements, or as a play with three acts. There's a third way you can understand it, which is if someone is familiar with dialectics, you could have thesis, antithesis, synthesis. All three have this idea of there being three phases. Just as a Gemini aside, I did do a reading one time for someone who is a classically trained musician, and she pointed out to me, Daniel, there's actually four movements in a symphony. But anyway, we're doing it as if there's three. Okay. So we're going to first look at the first movement. And this is looking at lineage. And I like using the word lineage to capture everything that we can tell from a chart that we came into the life with. Now, this is actually based on the assumption, and we'll just put the assumption right out on the table, that when you're born, you're not a blank slate. There are going to be behaviorists out there. In fact, still to this day in mainstream science, they teach primarily that it's all about nurture, not nature. is the contrast between nature and nurture. After having done this work for as many years as I have, I've not yet had one session with a person who has been really unhappy with this assumption. You know, like any woman who's had more than one child knows that no matter what you do or don't do to them, there's a certain essence that's there. There are characteristics that are there that were primal, original. So we make the assumption you're not a blank slate. In this type of astrology, we also do not make any dogmatic assertion about how this works. There's 1,000 different versions of reincarnation out there. There's numerous DNA approaches. We can look at family history. I like to kind of lump them all together. You can actually come up with certain insights depending on the moon position, whether a person has more material that is associated with their family rather than others where it's not associated with their family, like they've dropped in from elsewhere. We can actually see those variations. But in this work, this first movement of the symphony we call lineage would be looking at everything we can tell from the chart that has to do with what we came in with prior to developmental psychology, prior to what the parents said or didn't say, what the authority figures did or didn't say, whatever the nature of the culture was, the time period in history you're born into. Before taking any of those factors into account, there's things you can tell from the chart about, we can say, and that's the way I like to put it, it's like knowing the place on the wheel of life you were on before. Who did you used to be? And that includes attitudes, habits, addictions, expectations, as well as a variety of skills, a skill set. We come in with them. And depending on the culture, some of them are valued more than others. And this varies from one time in history to the next about which ones happen to be valued more than others. And also, depending on the nature of the culture we're born into, it could be valued more or less relative to gender. Certain lineages tend to be more supportive for men, some are more supportive for women. So we're trying to, let me put it this way. I'm not ignoring developmental psychology. There's a whole other part of looking at the chart that will address that. But right now we're just looking at what you came in with. Now the most important factor on the chart that describes this is the moon position. So I have a Capricorn moon. Actually, just to illustrate it, let's go around the room. I always like to see what tribes have gathered. Capricorn moon.
Sagittarius.
Capricorn.
Gemini.
Taurus.
Cancer.
Virgo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moon.
Jonah.
Oh, that's right.
Aquarius moon.
Aquarius moon.
Gemini moon.
Libra.
Libra moon.
Taurus.
Another Taurus moon.
Taurus.
Taurus
Sagittarius.
Moon. Sagittarius moon.
Scorpio.
Capricorn.
A lot of Capricorn moons. Yeah.
There are. Like one, two. Naked Lynn is her mom is Aquarius moon. Yali's Aquarius moon, so there's a couple of those. Do we have a Pisces moon?
No.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have two of us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, one, two. Yeah. Do we have any Pisces moons?
No.
Do we have an Aries moon?
No.
What other ones were missing? I think we had a Leo. Do we have a Leo moon? Yes, of course.
Libra moon.
Yeah, right there. And Aquarius, Pisces. Yeah. So we're missing Aries and
Libra.
No, not Libra. Pisces.
I'm sorry. Pisces. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have 10 of the 12 tribes here from lineage. The way this could work in just a normal way of having a conversation about it is that if I have a Capricorn moon, then the way I like to say it, I used to be a Capricorn. Or I previously graduated from the University of Capricorn. That's an alternate way of saying it. Or you could also say, I am from the Capricorn tribe. And you can use, whatever your favorite way of saying it is. When I do a first-time session for someone, I actually will suggest all three. You know, so we start with the moon. Always start with the moon. Let's see where your moon is. We'll see who you used to be. And then we tell the stories of those tribes, of which, from your work with Kaelin and with the astrodrama you just did, it turns out the three groupings of four, represent three categories of tribes, which have existed throughout history in different ways. As part of our way of reformatting this so that it's a bit more meaningful, we're using different expressions rather than when you do take a regular astrology course, they'll say fixed signs, they'll say cardinal signs, they'll say mutable signs. I wanted to come up with expressions that were a bit more meaningful than that. And over the past years, it's very clear that four of them are in the so-called householder category. By the way, when I was teaching in the Philippines, Lynn was saying to me, nobody here knows what you're talking about when you say householder. And I've actually had some people in this country, they think if they hear householder, it means you have to own a home. I'm using householder in a more archaic understanding of that expression, and she suggested a different expression for it, which I now use sometimes, culture bearer. These are the tribes that throughout history maintain a continuity from one generation to the next. In an extremely simple way of describing it, and this is really simplistic because it really depends on whether it's a patriarchy or a matriarchy, Cancer is the mother, father, Capricorn is the father, Libra are the husband and wife, and Aries are the ones who protect the tribe or protect the family. You know, so it's like the cornerstone, the foundation of how a culture lasts from one generation to the next, which includes honoring the ancestors, and it also includes dreaming it forward so that we care about the coming generations. So those four. So now if we're looking at the so-called householder or culture bearer category, we have the Capricorn moons, we have the Cancer moons. Where are the Cancer moons again?
This one.
And then there's our Libra moon and no Aries moon. So we have six in the group that are the previous culture bearers, householder tribes. The way I'm going to be describing this to you this afternoon is not to give an exhaustive list of examples of all the different moon tribes. Because the way this particular course is set up is that we'll be able to explore the 12 mystery schools in and of themselves, and then you can apply the lineage and other features of the chart to that. I will give some examples, though, just so you get the flavor of it. In other words, I'm not going to go through all 12 and say this is what each moon position means. Then we have the second category, which is of self-interest. This is not to be confused with selfish. And did you give the more recent definition we've been using for those four?
For the four...
Self-interest?
Oh, no, I did not.
Okay, so this is a very simple way of understanding the four that you saw up there not seemingly getting along. So, Leo Mystery School's function is to be creator for its own sake. Because you can. You can make it up any way you want. You're not looking around to see whether it corresponds to some more perfect creation. You're not tuning into to whether other people like it or not. You're making it up for its own sake. Pure creatorship. Taurus is into exploring what it feels like to be in a body for its own sake. So it's the enjoyment of the experience of being in a body. What the original Greek mystery school of Epicureanism was about. I did some research on Epicureanism, and this is not like today where people hear the word Epicure and they only think it's about food. Originally, Epicureanism was a mystery school dedicated to extending pleasure and minimizing pain. And they used three techniques. One was called endurance, meaning pleasure as long as possible. The second was intensity, meaning pleasure as deep as possible. And then the third approach, the third way, was called moderation. Which basically, just to give an example, you know, when you find out something that feels good, you don't do more of to make it feel bad. You know, like, this is very different than Scorpio, by the way. So Taurus might say, well, if two glasses of high-end wine make you feel good, but the third gives a headache, then we don't do that. So it's exactly the opposite of a Stoic who's afraid to investigate what feels good because they would think it's, you know, opposing their own path of liberation. So Taurus is about exploring how it feels in the body, particularly what feels good in the body, for its own sake. There's nothing codependent about it. It's never about anybody else but when your own experience. And I'm certainly there can be other parts of the chart. Please don't refer this to sun signs. Then Aquarius is about expanding consciousness as far as possible for its own sake. That's what it does. And then Scorpio is about exploring the furthest out possibilities of aliveness for its own sake. Where's the edge of aliveness? Well, generally the edge of aliveness is slightly past the edge, because you can't really see the edge until you go slightly past the edge and look back. So therefore, you can see the relationship between two schools that sit across from each other, Taurus and Scorpio. They both are exploring what it feels like to be in the body and an incarnation, but with very different approaches. The Scorpio approach would be, I want to see what the fourth glass is like. You know, let's just see what's on the other side of the headache. You know, it's really about taking it past limits. And as William Blake said a few times, he said, number one, this I think this relates to Scorpio, he said, you can't know how much is enough until you know how much is too much. And he also had made the comment very similar, the road of excess leads to the palace of wisdom. The road of excess leads to the palace of wisdom. The Scorpio path. All right. So, this is how we're meaning it to be of self-interest. It's not for the sake of others, and it's not for the sake of building a world. It's in order to explore the possibilities of the incarnation. One is in the element of air, one is in the element of earth, one is in the element of water, and one is the element of fire. Going to the edge for its own sake, going to the maximizing that approach for its own sake. Then the final four, service to spirit. It's very easy in our mind's eye to see how Pisces is of service to spirit. The project of the Pisces Mystery School has always been, how can we help and heal others? How can we help and heal everyone? Virgo, service. It's basically, the Virgo Mystery School is where some of the spiritual verities that are so well known in many of the mainstream traditions come from. It is better to give than to receive. Service is its own reward. So it's easy to see in the Virgo and Pisces Mystery School how that is in service to spirit. What about the other two? So the Sagittarian approach is exactly the opposite of the Pisces approach. The Pisces approach can be described as the vow of the Bodhisattva, which we could paraphrase for the purpose of this work. The vow of the Bodhisattva would be, I will forego my own final liberation as long as any human beings, actually the Dalai Lama suggested shifting it to say all life, is not realized, is still in suffering. So it's, you forego your own liberation until everybody else is liberated. Sagittarius is exactly the opposite. Sagittarius would say, in order for me to be in service to spirit, it's absolutely essential I attend to my own liberation first. So it's different than achieving it for self-interest. It's for the purpose of freeing all beings because of your own realization. This could be like the individual chooses to go to the mountaintop or chooses to continually open up new territory. You know, like, there's several spiritual teachers who are famous for that. It's like, you know, following a particular guru. Oh, do you know, he's now moved it up to level 9. Well, he's done for us. You know, it's like somebody is, maybe they were really doing that. We can be maybe skeptical about that. But, you know, that dedicating yourself in 100% commitment to expand your own awareness, to liberate yourself as a way of liberating others. That would be the Sagittarian path. Well, then how in the world is Gemini self-interest? I'm service to spirit. That was the harder one for me to get. Sacred theater is a great deal to do with it. So Gemini is assisting people in being free by going beyond duality and polarity, being able to assist people in getting the joke. One other fact to mention. It's because of the Gemini Mystery School that we have the traditions throughout history of the Holy Fool, the court jester, the heoka, the only one, the person in the tribe who didn't have to follow the rules of everyone else. They could behave in a contrary way. They could behave in a seemingly irrational and unpredictable way. But the people knew when they behaved that way, it was in service to spirit. It was not of self-interest. The crazy wisdom, indeed. So that's just a brief sketch of how those 12, at least in this way of cutting up the pie of life, describe the 12 main tribes, main roles in the world. So to come back to the script, whatever your moon is who you used to be, what your previous training was. Previously graduated. Now, almost all the stuff we can get from astrology associated with addiction can be seen in what's going on with the moon position. Now, I'm using the word addiction here, not just talking about, like, you know, sex or drugs or something like that, but an over-identification with certain kinds of behavior patterns. And if an individual comes from one of these tribes, it's understandable that they could easily identify or over-identify with the qualities that their specialty was in the past. Very easy to see how that can happen, particularly if it has been valued or validated by their family or by the culture. So I want to introduce another category so you can actually see how this works. Four of the tribes: Cancer, Capricorn, Pisces, and Virgo. Two of the ones that have to do with the householder and two of them that are in service to spirit are giver tribes.
Can you repeat them? Cancer, Pisces.
Cancer, Capricorn, Pisces, and Virgo.
Is that on Virgo?
Yes. Yeah. It's on the that form that I showed you at the end that kind of synthesizes all of it. Householder, self-interest, and service to spirit, like the elements.
So their orientation is toward to give. There's no training in those four tribes for one's own needs. Unless the needs are, I need to be stronger so I can continue giving. You know, so like you can talk to a Cancer moon, and if the person is over-identified with their Cancer moon, you can say to them, well, what do you want? And they'd say, well, I would like there to be a need for me to be able to provide nourishment. I want there to be individuals who I can take care of. I want to feel needed. That's what I need. And now what if you say to the Cancer moon person, what do you want, but you cannot list any of those things? There's no training in that lineage to be able to answer that question. So the person, say, with a Capricorn moon, what do you need? What do you want? I need a big job. I need a big responsibility. I need something I can hold together. I need a function. I need a function. This, the giver tribes, particularly Capricorn and Cancer, need a function. Why? Because they had a function. That's how they knew themselves. And unless a person has been radically violated there, certainly over the years I've done this work, 95% of people who have Cancer moon or Capricorn moon have been somewhat validated for the qualities associated with that position. So they end up keep doing it. And if they're any good at all, they keep becoming valued for it, until they finally hit the wall. Because unless you have Capricorn rising, the intent is to not remain stuck there. It's to move it somewhere else, because it's the old identity. And you can actually get similar statements for every one of the 12. And when we go through the 12 mystery schools, we'll look and see what the different shadow or holding patterns are for the 12 different moons. But from what I've shared so far, it's pretty easy to see what would be the challenges with those four, the givers. It's a particular form of codependency. You know, the teacher who needs the students more than the students need the teacher. The parents that end up needing the children at a certain point more than the children need the parent. A very classic Cancer moon problem would be the 80-year-old mother who keeps talking about her 60-year-old baby, who has not allowed the child to reach its maturity. They'll lose their job. It happens with certain kinds of therapists. You know, they may take on the hardest cases, and then they end up never being able to graduate the client. They'll lose their job. Yes.
My 84-year-old mother called me at 6:30 this morning and said, "Where are you? Could you tell me, please, where you are?"
But at least she didn't say, "Where's my baby?"
Can you tell me, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately in relation to the moon scientist, what is kind of a healthy level of identification with your moon? Because I hear you refer a lot to, "I do this so-and-so because of my Capricorn moon," and, you know, I have Jupiter conjunct with my moon, so I think it gives me a little bit, maybe more validity. But, I mean, what is a healthy level of identification? Because it's a gray area.
Unless a person has never been valued for their moon, it's way easier to be valued for one of these giver ones. But certain ones like Scorpio, certain ones like Taurus and some others have a harder time receiving healthy validation for the authentic nature of the moon position. But if one has received some validation for their moon, the goal is to get it to where it's about one-third of the story. The idea is that it's serving the objectives that come from the second and third movement of the symphony. So it's working for the storyline for current life purpose.
In a supportive role.
Yes. I mean, clearly, when I happen to hold forth in a circle, there's a part of me that's the Capricorn moon that's working. There's also a large part of the Libra rising, too. But we should love our moon position. I mean, we really, there's nothing wrong with the moon position. It's just that it believes it's God. You know, it believes it has been the one in charge for a long time. Sure, because it was. Since there are so many Capricorn moons here, I'll just mention something about it. The shadow of the Capricorn moon is the one who, for lifetimes, was the one who was considered to be the elder or the expert, and the one who was willing to take responsibility to hold it together for others. Imagine the captain of a ship. In the old tradition, anyway, I don't know if they're teaching them this way now, the old tradition is the captain was trained to go down with the ship. The commitment was to make sure everybody else got off before him.
A lot.
Yeah. So that's sort of Capricorn moonish. You know, you're putting everything into making it safe for everyone else, and you go last. Now that it's not too far for that a journey for that to become what's called the scapegoat complex. Which, in the Jewish tradition, started with the beginning of the Yom Kippur, where there was two goats, and one goat was killed, and the blood was used on the altar. The other goat would volunteer to carry the icons and symbols of the sins of the community on its back and take it out to the wilderness and atone. Well, it isn't long before the goat, and this is the origin of the complex, you know, the scapegoat complex, the goat ended up believing it was responsible for the problems. It was never responsible. It volunteered. You know, so that's what can happen when you hold on to it too long. Another illustration of it is if any of you have ever had a child who is a Capricorn moon, it's actually relatively easy in the early years to raise a Capricorn moon child. You just give them at a very early age something, you know, important to do, and then let them know they've done a good job. It can be extremely helpful for first-time parents in particular, which is incidentally why about 85% of the cases I've seen of people with Capricorn moon are the first in line. A lot of times the firstborn, you know, or the only child, or the oldest son, or the, you know, that kind of thing.
Didn't you say Capricorn moons sometimes they don't have the experience to actually be a baby?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So they come in adults. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're old when they're young. You know, so they're often, so in the early years it works well, but then you're already robbed of being just a kid. You know, being completely helpless because you have to hold it together early on. It's your tendency to do that anyway. Every one of the moon positions has its own contour like this that you can see both the value of it, the skills of it, and how the shadow side of it can then carry through. We spend a lot of time in our school looking at the ones that have been really wounded, like Scorpio moons, like in more recent time, Virgo moons, Taurus moons, are generally the ones that have hit the worst by patriarchy, by the judgments against what is the essential nature of those tribes. In fact, the last couple thousand years, the culture is pretty much marginalized Scorpio to the shadows. So much so that if you read sun sign descriptions of Scorpio, it makes it sound like it's all secretive and hidden. But in fact, that's a survival strategy, not how it actually is in essence. We do have a fair amount of Scorpio in this room, including people who are in major Saturn cycles to the Scorpio part of their chart, which is an opportunity to liberate oneself from the judgments that come from Saturn to Scorpio. You can, from the little you've seen so far about the nature of the 12, you can see kind of naturally which ones are valued and which ones aren't. You know, Taurus moon. Where were our Taurus moons? Obviously, you must have just been so self-indulgent and lazy for like, which brings up something very important to bring up. Shamanic astrology completely rejects any form of karma that has any Christian overtone. Much of what goes for karma, particularly in the New Age, quote-unquote, scene, is Christianized karma. Reward and punishment. You know, you're going through something difficult, it must be because of, something that happened in your past life. Or even in this life, you know, it's like, geez, everything went to shit because of the fact that I didn't keep to the perfection of my diet. All right, I forgot that meditation last week. Stuff like that. That's Christianized karma. I'm not rejecting karma, but if you go to India and you go and ask them about karma, what they'll say is very simple. They'll say unfathomable are the ways of karma. It is not possible for the logical linear mind to get how it actually works for one life in the course of one lifetime. So I consider it to be a total waste of time to look at a chart in that kind of judgmental sense. In fact, I've seen the charts of people who are allegedly enlightened. I'm not going to judge whether they are or not, but they've been considered by many to be enlightened and realized beings. They have really hard charts. Grand crosses, squares, amazingly challenging kinds of things. I would just simply say it was a highly motivated soul. I just want to make sure that you understand what I mean by not injecting Christianized karma into our understanding. It's not at all helpful. We make the assumption in this work that every person has the exact right perfect chart for them. It's for the unfoldment of their soul. And having done this for as long as I have, it really is all relative. You can have the horoscope that a couple generations ago, you could look at that chart and kind of really look at it and say, too bad for you. You know, I mean, this is just so hard. And then you have the horoscope that has no apparent challenges to it at all. Is one better or worse than the other? I see the people that have the alleged hard charts as being the really motivated souls. Those that have the so-called easy charts, they usually come to the reading and say, my life lacks meaning. You know, it's kind of like being born into a life where it would have been, where it's like the wrong time to be born. It's like I should have been born at the height of the British Empire and I could just return to my, like at a certain age, retire to my country estate. You know, there's just literally no motivational challenges whatsoever. It's really all very, very relative. And everybody has the exact right chart for the unfoldment of their soul. That's another assumption we make in this work. So if you have something that would be considered really challenging, like Saturn to a Taurus moon, Saturn to a Scorpio moon, some of the ones that have been...
Like square
oppositions. Yeah, squares, conjunctions, oppositions. Those have taken a bigger hit by the nature of the culture that we've been born into. And those need to be worked through in a very specific way. And I like to look at the shamanic astrology paradigm as a way of freeing, creating space, so that work could be done. And we don't have, so that we're not judging ourselves as if we've done something wrong, although we might have been told earlier in our life we've done something wrong. We have a whole training just on the outer planet complexes, Saturn complexes and things like that. This training is really just to get clear about the script and the archetypes.
And that training is the timeline?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, so far, all I brought up is the moon position. What you used to be. I'm willing to handle maybe one question about one specific moon position to illustrate it. And then we're going to talk about the jobs. So, because we have to rapidly get to the 144 storyline. Anybody want to hear something about one of the lineages, one of the tribes? Remember, we're going to go through all of these individually. Just so you're with me so far in what I'm describing. Virgo!
She had a Virgo job in the Virgo tribe.
Right.
So,
this actually brings up an additional category. Of the 12, two of them have historically been in the category called renunciate. Renunciate. Now, this comes from a time period in history where human beings were divided between householders and renunciates. Now, since the last 2,000 years, there has been a degrading of the renunciate traditions. So we, for example, have the Catholic Church, and from about 1300s and 1400s on, if you're a woman, there's only two options. You could either be successful as mother-wife, or there's always the convent. The third way was eliminated by the church in the 1400s, and that was the way of the courtesan.
You told me that today,
don't you? I know, I'm getting there.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. So I need to give you the background on renunciate. Now, historically, Virgo was in the category we call virgin priestess. But that phrase is used very precisely. Priestess would mean a woman whose identity is based upon her primary commitment to her sacred work. Sacred work in service to spirit. The mythic imagery would be like a group of women doing a winter solstice ceremony, knowing full well if they don't do it correctly, as far as we know, the sun may not return. Or women like in Greece, Vesta, Hestia, the women who kept the fire burning and did the ceremonies, maintained the integrity of the moon lodge, things like that. The virgin part of it did not mean no sex or pre-sex. It meant a woman was one unto herself. She did not know herself through a husband or a family. Virgin priestess. Now, this then became relegated to Bride of Christ or nun, or convent. Originally, it was not like that. In fact, frequently the virgin priestesses had more sex than the married women. But it was always within sacred context. So, over a period of time, Virgo, particularly within mainstream Western world, was relegated to spinster school teachers, these picky, critical, cold, seemingly alien kind of individuals. The thing is, originally they did live separately. They were outside the mainstream. They lived in a renunciate way. They were the shamans. I mean, John represents one of my favorite version of it, which is like these clans that were not owned by any tribe, and they would travel from place to place, and they did the stone circles, they did the music, they did the ceremonies to call in the rain, and they would go from place to place as these traveling medicine workers, you see. So there's that aspect of it also. But they're not like mainstream at all. But it's not that they're cold. It's that they have an incredibly intense discrimination. The discrimination is really intense. Did you read the Emerald Tablet thing? So when it gets to the last part about the pattern, it is Virgo that holds the key to the pattern. The web of life, the patterning of the rocks, the patterning of the stars, the patterning of the waves of the ocean, the patterning of the way plants grow, and the patterning of the psyche. It is not data and information. It's the left brain of the goddess. It's not just data and information. And unfortunately, within our current culture, many Virgo-type women are relegated to, because their minds are really good, to the computer terminal. And so they end up basically hanging out with silicon, the computer stuff, rather than DNA. The secret to Virgo is the connection to DNA. And Virgo is unbelievably well known for needing to be honored for the sacredness of sacred space. Does that give you a different take on it? And I've never known one woman with a strong amount of Virgo whose life ever became better by trying to pretend they aren't that way. Trying to override it by stuff. Become more like they think other people are. In fact, if anything, it only works to become even more self-loving of the degree of discrimination and perception of the multi-layered nature of reality. Is that it? All right? So now, the next step, and I would like to get into this immediately because it is going to come up when we get to the third movement. So, you know we don't do sun signs. They change every month. But I'm not also going to say that we can tell everything by just the position of the moon. It changes every 2.5 days. So it's kind of like every 2.5 days there's the same tribe that comes through. However, in one of the features of this work, based upon the house position of the south node of the moon, we'll come back to that so you'll all know how to find that, we can actually then distinguish the 12 by 12. So, for example, I have a Capricorn moon. The south node of the moon is in the second house, so we call that the Taurus job in the Capricorn tribe. 12 jobs in 12 tribes. Or 12 majors in 12 mystery schools. So I have the Capricorn, I graduated from the University of Capricorn, but I had the Taurus major. 12 jobs. Now this information comes from the signs applied to the houses. The nodes of the moon are a feature of the chart that change every 2 hours. So if you know a birth time, and I think everybody here has a birth time, you can really fine-tune this understanding by a feature that changes every 2 hours. Now, I would like to solidify this point because it's remarkable how it somehow doesn't sink in.
Wait, do you have the Capricorn in the Taurus tribes?
Yes.
And the Taurus comes from
where? I'm going to say. Okay. So, when you see the symbol of the north or the south node of the moon,
Okay.
That's the north node. That's the south node. And you locate it on the chart, you'll see that there's a sign next to it. Well, my north node is in Taurus, let's say. We're not basing it on that. The north node changes sign about every year and a half. So there's actually a very elegant logic to this. I'm not saying there's zero meaning to it, but it's a meaning that would say that everybody for a year and a half has the same meaning. That's way worse than even sun signs.
It's a generational factor.
Right. So the factor that we're looking at is a feature that changes every 2 hours, which highly individuates our knowledge of the chart. So if the south node of the moon on my chart is in the second house, and this might be the time for you to try to, if you don't know how to tell that, it's very likely that a neighbor can tell.
Well, the beauty of the chart
you
gave us is it has the number of the house.
Yes,
right.
At the center of the chart, yeah.
Find this particular symbol and just make a note of what house it is in.
The number on the inside,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's one of the finger games.
And then, because we are using a tradition that goes back more than 2,000 years, where they had an understanding that houses and signs had certain similarities, meaning that the house, the first house has a lot to do with Aries. The second house has a lot to do with Taurus. Basically, all you need to know is the order of the signs. So second house Taurus, third house Gemini, fourth house Cancer, fifth house Leo.
If you think about when we talked about earlier today that on the chart, that's what we could say humanity's chart, if Aries is on the first house, and that's the spring equinox, and Libra's on the seventh house, and that's the autumnal equinox. Mm-hmm. And then the first house being 30 degrees, first 30 days after the spring equinox is Aries, and then it's Taurus. And so each house carries the qualities of that particular sign, even though you may have a different rising sign or planets in those houses.
So
the underlying meaning of the house is the same, for the first house is the same as Aries, as Daniel was saying, and the second house is Taurus. And you just follow it around to get to the 12th house, which has the same meaning as Pisces.
What I will do sometimes, because there are some astrologers that are somewhat open-minded about the system that I'm using, but don't believe that signs and houses have the same meaning. So for them, I adjust the language, and I might say, rather than the Taurus job for me, I say I have the second house job in the Capricorn tribe. You have the 12th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you, rather than saying you have the Pisces job, you could say you have the 12th house job in the Capricorn tribe. I agree. But I'm just saying that there's another way you can look at it. Now, it's really important to understand that jobs, or the majors, 12 majors in each university, 12 jobs in each tribe, the jobs are a subset of the tribe. It's just like 12 different jobs in that tribe, 12 different majors in that university. The priority is that university. So, Melissa, what was your question?
I got it.
Oh, okay, good. So, did you all access the house position of your south node? So,
anybody not feel confident with it?
Just go around and maybe just use the language, either of the two methodologies. You know, I had the Capricorn job in the Aries tribe. I graduated from the University of Aries with a Capricorn major. I mean, whichever one you want to use.
I went to the University of Sagittarius and I majored in Scorpio.
I went to the University of Capricorn and majored in Sagittarius.
Yes. Virgo. Actually, your south node is in the sixth house, and that's the house of Virgo. Mm-hmm.
Sixth house.
So you majored in the sixth house.
Not the sign of the node, the house of the node.
The house.
Because it's changing houses every 2 hours, but all signs only every year and a half.
Okay.
So it's not the
first. There really is a logic to this.
Change houses every 2 years. 2 hours.
Sheriff.
Went to the general university and the
third house. You went to the University of Gemini and majored in Gemini.
Yes. Yeah, well, it's third house, third sign. You just look at the order of the signs.
Okay.
And one is Aries, two is Taurus, three is Gemini. It's really that simple.
Circle that area. Mm-hmm. So it all starts with that. That's number one.
Okay.
Now, I went to the University of Aquarius and majored in Virgo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Virgo job in the Cancer tribe.
Yes. Okay, good.
And I had the Gemini job in the Virgo tribe.
So,
Sagittarius, Sagittarius job in the Scorpio tribe. Yeah.
So,
good.
You and I are opposites.
Mm-hmm. So this is something in a circle to notice, to see where the alignments are like this. Okay.
I have the Libra job in the Leo tribe.
You come from the University of Leo tribe, and you had 7th house south node?
Yeah.
Right.
I got the Aries job in the Gemini tribe.
Yes.
The Cancer job in the Libra tribe.
Oh, you're so excited, Alan.
I hate kids.
Thank God you've been there and done that.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah,
Mary?
Okay.
I'm good at
work.
Aquarius job is close to right. The Sagittarius job is close.
I graduated from the University of Sagittarius. And my job is in the seventh house of that Libra?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a Virgo job in the Virgo tribe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we have two that are other part to it. It's maximum. All Gemini from the past, all Virgo from the past. Yeah.
Here's was in the first house, Aries job.
Right,
not
child moon is in the Aries.
Right,
Aries
job.
Aries
job.
In the Sagittarius.
Wait, what?
The south node is in the first house, Melinda.
You're the
list
of
north node. Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh.
You had it reversed.
Oh, Aries. Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Makes a big difference.
Big difference.
Yeah.
University of Scorpio, job in Virgo.
Virgo job and the Scorpio tribe. Yeah.
In lineage.
Well, why is that? What's that looking like?
I think it might, I don't know if it got it backwards or whatever. So it's the tribe of Scorpio and then the 12 majors of Virgo.
One of the 12 ways to be in the Scorpio tribe, you had the Virgo job.
Way of doing that.
That was the priest. So I'm going to actually go through what the 12 jobs are. That's the next step. So yours was.
I have the job of the Bodhisattva in the circle of grandmothers.
Woo!
It's a Capricorn!
Completely self-abnegated service to the circle of grandmothers. Okay. And then I had, I was the Taurus job in the Capricorn tribe. So we have, and so I'll just mention Lynn. She's Capricorn moon also. She had the Virgo job in the Capricorn tribe.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed. So, here's how it works, because what I'm going to share with you now would also apply to the third movement of the symphony when we get there. Because the 12 jobs can be applied to both the lineage, the first movement, as well as being applied to the third movement. So, Aries job. Who had the Aries job? First house job? Yes. So these are the members of the tribe that are able to literally do everything that that tribe is about on them, by themselves. It's the lone wolf, rugged individualist of that tribe.
Getting old.
It's lineage.
The workhorse. The workhorse in the tribe.
And you put that with Sagittarius, and it's totally the renunciate doing it by ourselves.
You use the renunciate.
It's not always a workhorse. I mean, certainly, I wouldn't say the Aries job in the Gemini tribe is a workhorse.
Being on a circuit.
They're just doing it all themselves. They're
renunciates.
They only know themselves.
Renouncing the middle world.
Then the Taurus job. How many of us for second house?
Jobs, second house jobs. Just you, Daniel.
Okay.
Just your house. It's your house.
So the second house job, the Taurus job, is the epicure of that tribe, the one who savors and enjoys the issues of that tribe the most. Now, of course, every one of these has its high side and its shadow. So it's frequently the Taurus job people, depending on whatever tribe it is, at their worst, they are snobs. You know, I know what's the best. I am the arbiter of knowledge. Yes. Or for me, I'm Jim knows. You know, it's like a... all the beer that's not worth drinking. Yeah.
All the music not worth
missing. All the music not worth missing.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. That's right.
We never take the bus.
Then the key word is savoring. It's savoring the affairs of that tribe.
The pleasure of, yes,
that's a great way of putting it. And then the third, or the Gemini job, how many Gemini jobs? No Gemini, yeah.
Share and
Well, so that one, it's very hard to narrow that one down in just the one sentence. It could be the comedian of the tribe, the one who gets the joke of the tribe, the greatest flexibility of the tribe, the networker of the tribe, the magician of the tribe, not sorcerer, but the one who dances beyond duality and polarity in the tribe. That flavor. And when it's particularly fun when you see it together with Virgo, because that's the sacred theater combination. That it also works the other way, the Virgo job and the Gemini job, too.
Right.
Those
right.
two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then yours is... Sorry. I didn't even... I was going through the not you. So the cancer job.
No, Alan had the cancer job.
Fourth house.
Anybody else?
Mm-hmm. You will want it.
Alan left. Yeah, so this within the patriarchy, the fourth house job, the cancer job, is the mother nurturer. It's the one that takes care of everybody. It's the one that tunes into the needs of everybody in the tribe. Then we have the Leo. Anybody have the Leo one?
Leo job.
The Leo job is the one who would be considered the leading man or leading woman of the tribe, the star of the tribe.
Yeah, no Leos. They would already raise their hand.
Yeah. And then the sixth house, or the Virgo job, that's the priest or priestess of the tribe. The one who has the capacity to, in an incredibly focused and disciplined way, hold the space of the affairs of that tribe. The priest of the Aquarius tribe. And that actual, one thing about that combination, the Virgo job and the Aquarius tribe, it probably, if we think of a spectrum, from personalness, heavily social and personal, to being spacious, autonomous, and separate, the Virgo Aquarius is the epitome at that end of the spectrum. The someone who would have been completely self-sufficient in their own mind and in their own space. No need of human affairs so much. I'm in the past.
And then the maximum possible Virgo.
Mm-hmm. Right. Then we have the Libra job. So this is the person in the tribe who would have known themselves through the others. So this is intriguing, because if you have the Libra job connected in with a householder lineage, these are the ones that are just completely identified in a vulnerable way with the people they're in relationship with. They would have also been the people that were experts at bonding. So actually almost all people with the Libra job, or we could say Libra moon, have to go through a phase in their life of radically individuating and never and not having your life based upon who you're with at all. Yes?
But what about when
some point in time?
In the Leo tribe, how does that work?
A king and queen. They're basically there's certain mythic storylines that are very easy to see in certain combinations. I can't say that I have an easy one for all 144 yet, but we're working on it. But the Libra job in the Leo tribe is Hera with Zeus. And if you think of the old story, I mean, basically it's a woman who's the queen, but quite frankly, she's queen because she's married to the king. You know, so there's the expectation of being with the king, and so that usually a person with the Libra connection from the past, even though they are expert relational people, they have to get over defining who they are by who they're with. Mm-hmm. By the way, she wrote a whole book about her life story, about that journey, mm-hmm. called Romancing the Beloved, about what she had to go through in order to have that happen.
Mm-hmm. Great book, highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Romancing the Beloved.
You should probably bring a few over when you put on the table with the other books. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then we have the Scorpio job. Anybody have that one in our group? Yes, I think we have one. Who had the Scorpio? Oh, you did from the
yeah,
past.
Yeah.
So the person who has the eighth house job is the one with the strongest will to maintain, or to, shall we say, beyond maintain, to take the affairs of that particular tribe to its limits. So it's like the shaman or the sorcerer of the tribe.
So for the Scorpio job in the Sagittarius tribe, it's the relentless pursuit of the truth to its furthest extremes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's you?
That's me.
Yeah. In our lineage, yes. And then we have the Sagittarian job. Anybody in our group for that one? So that is the adventurer explorer of the tribe, taking it where it's not gone before, but not in the sense of the intensity and depth. It's more going down a road we've never gone down before, more from a truth-seeking and philosophical perspective.
But she's a Scorpio moon.
Yeah, but she's a Scorpio, exactly.
Which is why we have this really interesting lineage connection. So just as I made the comment that what I said about John's, the combination of Virgo Gemini, where it's the Gemini job and the Virgo tribe, it's very similar. It's the Gemini job, the Virgo job and the Gemini tribe. So here we have a similar thing. Sagittarius job in the Scorpio tribe, Scorpio job in the Sagittarius tribe. They're like cousins of the 144. Similar issues from the past. Then the 10th house. Anybody have the Capricorn job? So the Capricorn job means the elder or the expert of the tribe. The responsible party of the tribe. The one who knows the most in the tribe. The elder expert. The manager. Prime minister of the tribe.
Administrator.
Mm-hmm. Capricorn came in with that responsibility, or so-called job.
Yeah.
What if they didn't have Capricorn attributes? Where did they get the attributes?
No, that's why the jobs are different than the mystery schools themselves. We're deriving the meaning of the jobs from the houses and the tribes. Like, for example, take something like Gemini lineage. It has nothing to do with responsibility at all. What if it was the Capricorn job in the Gemini tribe? Well, we could say that's the member of the tribe who knows the most number of stories. He's the elder of the tribe. So it's not. It doesn't necessarily mean responsibility the way Capricorn lineage is
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're going to do it their way.
They, oh, yeah, but they know that then they can back it up. I mean, they're the elder.
So they're a lineage carrier, so what mm-hmm. they're sharing is mm-hmm. from that, from a lineage that they carry.
So they just bring their own gifts with them and do the best they can.
Are you what? Say
well,
more. What you?
Well, you know, if you're carrying a job that generally, if you're say the last one, we're bringing in Capricorn. Mm-hmm. You're going to do better with those inherent qualities that you brought with you.
Yes. Okay. An example here would be what I was saying about Joan,
right.
Or anybody with a Libra job. They actually are better at relational issues than other people.
Right.
But there's part of the soul intent to get over that identification.
Right.
So the same thing for the Capricorn moons or the Capricorn jobs, that they might have had a really, really, really big job in the past. Most people with a Capricorn job have to be willing to have a smaller position, even though they had the capacity of have the big one in the past. So it's like a graduation from big to small, I guess you could say, or from impersonal to more personal.
Define soul intent. You said that.
Okay. That's actually that's something that sometimes will come out in the first introduction I do. It's like the journey of the soul. No, I want to address it. This is where
because I mean you mentioned mm-hmm. that too,
right? So earlier in the day, I was saying that in this work we make the assumption that you're not a blank slate when you come in. There is a second assumption, and the second assumption is that our life has meaning or purpose. Now, I'm just putting it on the table. We're making that assumption in this work. There are plenty of people who might say, it's all a crapshoot. There is that belief. Now, and although I've had some experiences myself, personally, of implicate order or some higher meaning or purpose to our existence, not everybody's had those experiences. I take the view of Albert Camus, who basically said, when he was faced with the existential French philosophers, who said, life is absurd, there's no meaning, it's all a crapshoot, and the only legitimate philosophical question is that of suicide. So if you have a bad hand, you can choose to exit a stacked deck system. And so Camus said, I rebel. Even if I can't prove to you that there's some higher meaning or purpose, the function of a human being, the definition of a human being is to rebel against absurdity. We create meaning and purpose. That's what we do. So I'm making this is why this is more Jungian. You know, Jung is kind of sits on the Sagittarian place on the wheel, even though he was Leo's son. Basically saying the purpose of life is not sex, it's not power, it's not will, it's not even survival, but rather it's the quest for meaning and purpose. You know, that's the preliminary response to your question. There's a word we use in shamanic astrology a lot, which is intent. And we, I guess you could say a subset of this second assumption is the fact that our lives have an intent, original intent. Whether we remember it or not, we intended certain things. And the unfolding of our life, whatever techniques we use, whether it's shamanic astrology or numerous other marvelous tools that are out there today, is to be able to more align with original intent, which includes a meaning or a purpose to our life, or a set of objectives for the unfoldment of the soul in the current life. So when I look at the script as a set of instructions, which is to help us tune in to what the original intent was, And I've just seen too many cases. It's like my friend Lou, whenever we talk about astrology, he said, you really think there is something to this astrology stuff? And one reason that I keep involved in astrology is I'm continually surprised. Good God, how could this, had the set of instructions be this amazing? You know, and if even up to including things like people who are afraid they're never ever going to have a fulfilling relationship. And usually the point of surrender is when the person essentially stops trying, and they trust in the fact that they already intended it. You don't have to keep attending; it's already on the set of instructions. You know, stuff like that. You know, so to be able to tune in to that original intent is extremely helpful. So the journey of the soul then includes how helpful these mythic stories of our lineage are. Maybe literally true, maybe not. But the story, it's sort of like today there's a whole school of archetypal psychologists. They're not billing themselves as past life readers. So we're just going to tell a mythic story of you, for yourself, you know? You can tell the story that underlies your life experience. And it can be very helpful. That's how we're seeing the first movement here.
And sir, the sign that the self node is in, mm-hmm. does that have any meaning to what this is we're talking about now? Or is it
third pound. Two, three. This is what... It's amazing how much this confuses people. The sign of the node stays in the same sign for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. It has some meaning, but considerably less meaning than even sun signs. Because basically the meaning you would get from it would be true for everybody for a year and a half. Which is extremely insignificant compared to these factors that change every 2 hours.
But the place where it would have any significance, I'm just asking if this is true, would be when you get to looking at the aspects to your nodes or your oppositions to your nodes. You're not
the transits.
Well, those are the transit cycles are entirely different.
Right.
It would be the same thing we put it kind of halfway between Jupiter and Saturn. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're doing a reading for someone, you don't start off by saying, we're going to start by looking at the fact that you have Saturn in Scorpio.
Right. Right.
Well, so does everybody for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, if you start with that, you're missing so many personal factors. Obviously, when you do chart connection stuff,
right.
you're looking at that as a locator,
right.
the
right.
same way that Saturn can be a locator, Jupiter
right.
can be a locator.
Okay.
But as far as the creating of the script
the
material,
line,
no.
Right.
It's nothing new to the storyline. Yeah.
But I think maybe what Mary's asking, which I'm noticing here, is that in your thesis lineage here, you have planets near the south node rather than a specific skill from previous training.
Well,
you are talking about the actual sign that the south node
We haven't even gotten to that part yet.
Okay.
Right. If the planet would be conjunct the south node based on the sign that
the south node
is in. Yes.
We're not talking about that.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's not. It doesn't have a feature by the sign
right.
as far as the storyline.
No,
I'm trying to get on the train, but I haven't quite. What's hanging me up?
Yes.
Is the core assumption, say, from the Sagittarian Jungian lens that there is meaning, there is purpose, right? But, you know, if you went into more of like a Joseph Campbell perspective, who did all the research on all the religions, and I don't want to get into an argument with you on this, I just want to get on the train, okay?
Questions.
So, like Joe Campbell, who just spent his whole life studying all of the religions, said the purpose is to have a meaningful experience that you can feel and embody that basically brings you joy, you know, paraphrase.
Yes.
Like towards the card. But that embodiment piece, to actually feel it, as opposed to understand it through the Sagittarian Jungian window. I mean, how do we take that lens and make it universal in terms of the human?
Well, I certainly wasn't limiting that to that at all.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, when we get to the third movement of the symphony, we're looking at all the pathways. You know, so in fact, there's part of this has to do with the interrelationship between involution and evolution. That some people are on a journey to fire and air, up and out.
Right.
Some people are on a journey that starts in spirit and come down and in.
Right.
Everything you said there, I'm in entire agreement with. So when I was saying that I'm on the Jungian Jupiterian thing, it's only from the perspective whether your meaning and purpose, like Scorpio rising, is maximum aliveness. Well, it's only going to be the Sag risings that only see it as truth. Now, do you get what I'm saying here?
That's a good one. I'm on the train.
Okay. Okay.
We still have two more jobs to do.
We do. So,
thanks, Capricorn.
I want those kinds of questions so that we're all on the train.
Yeah. You lost me when you explained that to Tomas at the end. And I'm trying to differentiate the difference between the soul intention, and like, how does that differentiate from like maturation? You know, like
stages. Are you talking about stages of life?
Yeah.
Talking about stages of life.
Like your domestication. Like what happens to you in life. Is that versus the?
There is there. As I mentioned earlier in the talk, we don't discount on any level developmental psychology.
Okay. And that's what I thought you said.
Right. Okay. This so far, we're only talking about lineage,
mm-hmm.
And we're making the assumption that if we understand the place on the wheel you were on before, we're completely not looking at wounding, developmental psychology. It's like a pure sense of that place on the wheel of life. And it was, you did it amazingly well. You were very, very developed in that place on the wheel. And we come in remembering that. It's kind of like the superego of our lineage. It's a completely different understanding. A superego, by the way, means the judge, the critic, the rules, the regulations, what our parents told us was right or wrong, you know, and the nature of the religion we were born into, the nature of the culture we were born into, and so on. I'm saying that from our lineage, pre-developmental psychology, we have judgments like Capricorn Moon. Most of the time, the last thought that I have before I go to sleep at night and the first thought I have in the morning is, you better have it together and know what you're talking about. That did not come from my parents. That came from being Capricorn Moon. Somebody want to trade with me?
I worry about what everybody else needs.
No, so there's these certain attitudes that we have that, you know, that come from the legitimate place on the wheel of life we had before. Once we start developing the different mystery schools, I mean, I can envision the one I'm going to have with you, which is, it's going to be, let's see what Gemini looks like talking to Capricorn.
Yeah.
That is such
Capricorn.
We have that every night. Every time we get
I know. Right. Yes. So we're valuing all these places. And many of our inherent biases, as well as our skills, come from the legitimate, marvelous place on the wheel of life we're on before. So, now, the Aquarius job, the 11th house, this is a number of things. It could be thought of as the revolutionary of the tribe, or it could simply be seen as the eccentric of the tribe. The one who wants to be the different one. It's like the one who has the t-shirt You laugh at me because I'm different. I laugh at you because you're all the same. You know, so that's the Aquarian. Who had that one? Anybody
Mary.
Here?
Mary has that one.
Now, when you put something like the Aquarius job together with Taurus, Aquarius is more than just those couple. The Aquarius job is also the refinement, the egalitarian, the universal, the avant-garde. You know, so I've come up with these kind of one-sentence descriptions. You know, so like Aquarius job in the Taurus tribe is like the elegant gypsy, you know, or the spiritual courtesan. Now, then we have the Pisces job. The Pisces job is the
healer
of the tribe. The healer. The one who is there to have everything that's part of that tribe be dedicated in service to the relieving of suffering. And the combination of Pisces and Capricorn is worse. It's really what we could say. It's what the person with that combination really needs to get over is taking care of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, taking on the suffering and sorrow and wounding of it helps to have the Aquarian intent. You know. So this is just a flavor of the jobs. Question.
Is it too simplistic to think that from the first house to the 12th house that they're all significant from one to the next, that they're all building on one another?
Yeah.
You can't have the fifth without the fourth,
yes.
The third without the second.
That's true. Yeah. And there can be whole teachings just on that, but I'm trying to, believe it or not, I am giving you here a system that is unbelievably simplified compared to mainstream way of looking at horoscopes. And yet it cuts to the chase of the journey of the soul like nothing I've ever, ever seen. And we've only done the first movement. We're going to do about a 10-minute break. Those who know